Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope for episode number 9 in our second episode of 2019. I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and as always, I'm not a mental health professional, but simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. We've got an exciting next couple of weeks for you here, so we'll be wrapping up season 1 of Anthologies of Hope. We have Katie this week for episode 9, we'll have Candace next week for episode 10, our last planned episode for season 1, and then we'll have our season 1 bonus episode, episode 11, with the Conversations Cafe content recorded live from the Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Chicago on December 19th. The topic of that event was All in the Family, and there's some great discussion with mental health experts and advocates in regards to mental health in both the formal and casual sense of family. We'll be taking a few weeks off to prep our season 2 episodes and then be back in time for spring with a whole slate of interviews looking to be at least 10 but probably pushing 12 episodes in format similar to season 1. Also, we have some pretty exciting news is that we'll be able to have additional bonus content coming throughout season 2 directly from more of the Conversation Cafes hosted at Sip of Hope, recorded live each month. We'll be bringing them to you as quickly as possible as soon as they happen. And also, if you're a local Chicago listener, be sure to check them out whenever they are posted, usually on the Sip of Hope or Hope for the Day Facebook pages, or you can search for Conversations Cafe on Eventbrite to find tickets there. Again, it's a free event hosted monthly. Be sure to check it out, as we'll have some great programming coming directly from them. Now, as I mentioned, we're still in season 1 and still connecting with some of the extended HeartCamp family across the 5 sessions that were run in 2018. These include Florida, Los Angeles, and Nashville. If you're not familiar with the HeartCamp concept, we dive deep into the ins and outs of it in our first 2 episodes, so be sure to go back and check out the interviews with Anna and Britt. Additionally, this season and the next season of our podcast will cover conversations with the members of the HeartCamp family before we start bringing folks in from the general mental health community and the larger Chicago mental health community in season 3. As a quick refresher, HeartCamp is a brainchild of Jamie Torkowski and a 2-day workshop focusing on authenticity, writing, bring your heart to work, and mental health. For more info on HeartCamp, including upcoming dates like February 2019 and Melbourne, Florida, you can check out heartcampwithjamie.com for details. Katie Mumper joins us this week for another exciting conversation around her mental health journey, what makes her tick, and why she loves writing so much. Katie is a Whovian, or a Doctor Who fan for those unfamiliar with that term, a Penn State super fan, and currently in charge of social media for To Write Love on Our Arms. So we have some back-to-back continuity with folks doing great grassroots hands-on work with one of our favorite mental health organizations, with last week's guest, Kenneth, being a former intern. I had a blast talking with Katie, as she's another one of our guests that has a great grasp of her story, where it was most difficult, where she fought for the light, and where she needed the help, and how she got through all of it, while still also acknowledging the power of everything she gained through her previous struggles, including an addiction that she talks openly and has previously written openly about. Katie is very Enneagram aware, which always makes for a great conversation here as well, so if you're looking to see how the mind and soul of a 4 works on the Enneagram, you don't want to miss this episode. As you know by now, we're putting together a playlist available at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist that hosts and guests of each episode can contribute meaningful songs to. Katie's choice of Beautiful Things by the band Gunger was another serendipitous choice to hear. As fans of our podcast know, I'm a big fan of Pete Holmes' podcast, You Made It Weird. And shortly after Katie and I chatted, Pete released an episode of his amazing podcast with Michael Gunger as the guest. This one is still in my backlog, but I can't wait to catch up on it, and I love when worlds collide. My choice this week is an acoustic version of a pretty collaborative hit between Jess Glynn, Macklemore, and the group Rudimental. If you haven't heard These Days, definitely check it out. It is a bit slower and easier listening than some of my more recent selections, especially different than the choices Kenneth and I made and added to the list last week. But it is a song that gives me permission to feel, permission to understand where I am in my journey, and one that I play on repeat pretty often. I won't quote any lyrics for my selection this week, as I can't really justify only one set of them. Since the song is a beautiful composition, pretty much from start to finish. So be sure to check out These Days and Beautiful Things on our playlist after you listen to this very episode. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you are in a more positive season. If you're in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from To Write Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter at AnthologiesPod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Please like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Overcasts. And anywhere else you would like to hear us, let us know. So here we go with this week's Anthologies of Hope, episode number 9, Katie Mumper.
Sure. My name is Katie Mumper, and I am 34. I currently live in Florida, but grew up in Pennsylvania. Been slowly working my way south. Lived in Atlanta for about 6 years. Worked in nonprofit in various capacities for most of my life, and currently work for Twilight Love on Her Arms, actually. So doing social media for them.
Excellent. Now, is that social media gig at Twilight Love on Her Arms a recent transition?
That is. I started at the beginning of July. Okay. So, been here about 5 months now, I think. So. Yeah.
So that was after your heart camp experience then?
That was after my heart camp experience, yes.
And is this something where you've previously done a lot of social media for other nonprofits, or was this a new venture into social media specifically for one of our favorite nonprofits?
Right. No, I've kind of worked my way here roundabout. I was a religious studies major with a minor in English in college and have been figuring out what I want to be when I grow up ever since.
I think we all still are trying to figure out what we want to be when we grow up.
Yep. So I've worked a few different places along the way. When I moved to Atlanta, I had friends who started a nonprofit. So I moved there to kind of work with them on that, but needed a job that was actually willing to pay me. So I started working. Started working as a virtual executive assistant. So working remotely, basically, and did a lot of different things with that. But one of my clients had a blog and had a pretty big social media presence. So I did a lot of social media for him and just kind of began to learn the process from that. And then eventually decided working in an actual office with other people was going to be important. I was starting to spend a lot of time by myself on my couch in my apartment. So I wound up working for a small nonprofit in Atlanta doing marketing, specifically social media marketing for them. That led to a position with a larger national nonprofit and did nonprofit or social media marketing for them on a regional scale and then moved into a national role. And then actually applied twice for jobs at Twilight Love on Her Arms. Didn't get the first one, but I'm realizing now that was because I wasn't supposed to get that one. And then applied actually around this time last year for the job that I have now. And then took a little while for them to kind of get the process rolling, but I'm here now. So
awesome. Yeah, it's interesting how sometimes that works out where the job you want initially isn't what you're supposed to get. But then after a little while, it's more of a be careful what you wish for, because then you find out right back where you never thought you always wanted to be type thing. So
yep.
Now you mentioned your religious studies major in college there. Mm-hmm. And that's something where we share a little bit of a background too, because you are a Penn Stater as well.
Well, I didn't actually graduate from Penn State.
Okay.
My parents both graduated from Penn State. I went to a small liberal arts college in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where I was actually a tour guide. And one of the facts that we often gave to people was that Allentown is the third largest city in Pennsylvania, except for when Penn State is in session or there's a Penn State football game happening. And then State College becomes the third largest mm-hmm. city because of all of the people. So,
okay.
But yes, now I grew up watching the Nittany Lions play football, and I'm a Nittany Lion at heart. Muhlenberg doesn't really, and they're a Division III school, so it's kind of pointless to cheer for them.
Yeah, I often end up following your Twitter feed more accurately for Penn State updates than either most of my friends or other sport outlets. So that works well that way.
No, well, glad I can be of help.
Yeah. So switching to some of the normal conversation that we end up having here, and I'm sure we'll touch on a couple of the other pieces that you have in your Twitter profile there, similar to like what we did with Britt in our mm-hmm. second episode. But you have a blog that you shared a post about with Heart Camp on that was pretty mm-hmm. thorough and covered all the angles as far as what got you there, some of your inspiration, what you got out of it. So we'll link to that one. and on your blog, you end up covering a lot of your journey there, but a lot of the conversations we have on Anthologies of Hope are all built around a journey to where you're at now, a journey to where somebody mm-hmm. was prior to Heart Camp, whatever that means for you. What was some of those items there? I mean, in some of our prep for this, you mentioned wanting to talk about some of the resources that were most valuable to you getting to this point, some of the catalysts along that way. And then what do you want someone to be able to be inspired by or take away from your quote unquote journey?
Yeah. So that blog post that I wrote actually at the Sun Shop in downtown Melbourne, which has become one of my favorite places since moving here.
Ironic how that happens.
yeah. So I talked a lot about just that idea of your heart is welcome here and what that meant for me. So I am the oldest of five kids, grew up in a Christian household, went to church for most of my life, and starting around the age of 11, basically started down a road to addiction, and actually addiction to pornography, which is not something that women normally talk about. So I spent a lot of my life really feeling isolated and alone in that. Also being the typical oldest child, I was the one who was supposed to follow the rules and do all of the right things.
Be the prototypical perfect child.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, spent a lot of my life hiding what I was struggling with because I didn't know how to talk about it. Didn't have the words for it. And so because of that, that addiction really affected a lot of my relationships, particularly with my siblings, especially because I was trying to maintain that perfect older mm-hmm. child image. But then also through college, and that was kind of when I really started to see how it was affecting my life. Kind of one of those things where like you could justify it because you weren't technically hurting anybody else. But at the same time, I struggled a lot in my friendships because I wanted to be close with people and I wanted people to know me for who I really was. But at the same time, I didn't really want them to get close enough to find out who I really was. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of this whole push-pull kind of situation.
Jekyll Hyde type situation.
Yes, yes, exactly. And worried about what would happen. I am a 4 on the Enneagram, so rejection is a big deal for me. And so definitely that was my biggest fear, was that once people found out who I really was, that they would reject me and walk away and that would be it. So did a lot of pushing friends away. Looking back now, I definitely can see that I was most likely struggling with depression. Again, didn't have any kind of context for that. Mental health wasn't mm-hmm. necessarily something that was talked about in my house. I knew a little bit that my mom kind of sort of went to counseling for some things, trauma and things that were from her past, but it still wasn't anything that we really talked about a lot at home. And then also in the church, it doesn't really get talked about very much either. And so I had some kind of mentoring relationships and we talked about some things here and there, but most of the time the bottom line message was pray about it, love Jesus more, you'll be good, mm-hmm. Which was unfortunately not the case. I actually came pretty close to failing out of school, or at least not finishing my degree. I managed to convince some professors to give me some grace and mercy in that. So didn't finish as well as I would have liked, but I did finish. And so after graduating from college, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, because I also very much grew up in this culture of you go to college, you find your husband, mm-hmm. you get married, you have kids, and that's your life. And I'm now 34 and not married and I don't have kids. And so that is obviously not how my life has gone. So trying to figure out what I was supposed to be doing after graduation was difficult. I actually wound up spending a school year in England,
okay.
With an organization called Adventures in Missions. And that's probably the first time that I had some really real conversations with people about what I was struggling with. I started to be open about that from the beginning in some of the relationships there. I knew that I needed to start talking about it. I'd had some opportunities prior to that, kind of as I finished up college. I can't remember if I told my mom at that point or when I got back, I think before I left for England, and had some interesting conversations with her. But while I was in England, one of the other girls who was there with me struggled with the same thing. And so we were able to have conversations about that from the same perspective and to be able to talk about what was difficult and what were the things that triggered us into those addictions, and kind of, you know, you could go through periods of being able to stay away and then falling back into it and all of those things. And so that really started me on the road to recovery. But a big part of all of that as well was kind of starting to understand my heart a little bit more. And I talk about this in the blog post, that one of the things that I was taught a lot, especially throughout college, was this idea that there's a verse in, I think it's in Jeremiah, that talks about it says that the heart is deceitful above all else. And so I was always taught that, like, you can't trust your heart. Basically boils down to you can't trust your feelings, which doesn't help a 4 on the Enneagram, because we are all about feelings. Yep. And that is how we process the world and understand what's happening around us. And whatever we're feeling is the truth in the moment. And so, yeah, so basically what I was being taught was that my feelings weren't valid, which was not the case. And so because of that, I just was very much caught in this whole cycle of shame and guilt that kept me locked into this addiction. So once I came back, kind of continuing down the road, it was a long journey, but finally getting to a point in about 2010, I think, of being able to understand fully what forgiveness meant and being able to forgive myself, to know that I was forgiven and that my past didn't define me anymore. And that was the big part, because in everything, no matter how many times I told myself, like, you can do this, you're free, you can move forward, it wasn't until I understood that my past wasn't defining me anymore that I had the chance to write a new story, that I was able to actually find freedom. And a big part of that as well was a couple of friendships that I formed in about 2009, 2010, particularly my friend Heather, who I'll give a fangirl shout out to. she really took the time to kind of wade through my crap and get to know the real me. And even though I was still struggling with this, I want to be known, but I don't really want you to know everything, she made a point of getting to know everything and still loving me anyway and staying and not rejecting me. And that was really healing for me, to have a friendship and to know that I was capable of having a friendship like that. But also knowing that there were people out there who could love me in spite of myself in a lot of ways, and who were willing to kind of create space to make my heart welcome. I think that was kind of my first experience with that. And so Heart Camp, just kind of 8 years later, was another
way to solidify it.
Yep. So I think in the time since then, I've really, probably the biggest thing has been continuing to get to know myself and my heart, figuring out what it is that I want out of life. What are my dreams beyond being a wife and a mom, which are still there. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, like, what do I want my life to look like? What do I want to accomplish? And what do I want to be the things that I leave behind as far as kind of my legacy and the things that I did? So yeah, so it's kind of a bit of my story.
Yeah, a bit. That's a quite impressive story. So thank you for the depth there and the full 360 degree view there. It's interesting with the number of attendees through Heart Camp, and especially obviously coming through Jamie and the Christian background that Trite Love in Our Arms has as an organization, with the affiliation with some of the Christian music performance artists that are there. But the number of folks that are on the Christianity spectrum that come in and have some level of interaction and kind of that same conversation that you just mentioned there, where it's pray about it, love Jesus more, eventually it'll get better. And so in our Heart Camp, I don't know if it was Jamie was quoting somebody that he was talking to recently, or somebody else had said it, as far as a lot of the people there that were in, like, kind of half in, half out, and they were with their faith, but not religion type thing, and he coined the term grumpy yes. Christians. And so it was something where, again, like they knew like in their heart that what they believed was mm-hmm. right, but then the context or the organization that they were working with wasn't exactly living up to the standards that yep. it should be. So it's interesting to hear your story in that context and a lot of the directives that you get yeah. inside there and working in there as well. And from someone for coming from myself as someone with a bit of a tenuous relationship with religion yeah. growing up, both from contextual and familial issues, and kind of coming back to it as far as a really roundabout way, but a more global view of that, mm-hmm. it ends up being very interesting to have everybody coming back to a similar conversation, especially in the context of mental health and how a lot of these organizations and a lot of what we've generally done prior to, you know, the past 20 years have been for betterment of community and mental health and things like that. And now we've seen that, or there seems to be a little bit of a left turn there to now have them be a little bit separate. And again, not necessarily going to the normal resources that you mm-hmm. have inside your church, but having them be in kind of in partnership or in parallel and be able to coincide with yeah. each other. Based on some of your discussions and friend work and everything, and you said your mom had gone early on for some trauma to therapy. Did you ever end up seeking traditional therapy throughout your story?
I haven't. It's something that actually kind of now that I'm here and especially with working to write love, it's something that I'm planning to be doing in the near future. Because I think, well, I know that I can benefit from it. I think everybody can benefit from it from mm-hmm. from what I've seen. But yeah, no, I have not gone that route. I've had a couple conversations with a counselor about a specific situation that I was in earlier this year with roommate situation that turned out to be horribly horrible. And so kind of figuring out some specific action steps and things like that. And so even just those couple of conversations were helpful in understanding myself a little bit more. And so I want to be able to explore that. I do know that for myself, like I'm a writer. And so I process a lot of stuff verbally, whether that's speaking or writing things down. But I, again, because feelings are such a big thing for me too, when writing or talking brings up some sort of emotion, I have a tendency to get stuck in that and not be able to move mm-hmm. through it. And so even in some of the mentoring relationships that I had in college, just having someone else who was able to like to sit with me in those moments and kind of be outside of what I was feeling and ask some questions to help me kind of continue to walk forward was definitely helpful. And so I'm at a point where I'm realizing that I need that on a more regular basis. So finding a counselor is at the top of my list of things to do, along with, you know, regular physical health doctors and all of those sorts of things now that I'm yeah. here.
That's good to hear. One of the other organizations that I work or that I've been participating with locally in Chicago is I would say a peer organization of Detroit Love in Our Arms, but Hope for the Day is another mental health organization that their main mission is proactive suicide prevention. That's their kind of tagline. And I took a training session back at the beginning of September. There's another one coming up next month that I'll do that's more kind of in depth. But one of the things that they mentioned there is with the act of mental health and just the treatment of mental health is everyone thinks that, you know, something like therapy is something like the hospital. Like you go, you mm-hmm. get fixed and then you go right. home and it's yep. fine. Whereas no, like the hospital is a monitoring solution, mm-hmm. whether it's both mental or physical. You don't get better in the hospital. You get better once you go mm-hmm. home. And after you kind of heal, you break your arm. Like you're not going to stay in the hospital the entire time. Like you go there to get treatment and then you go yep. home. So kind of what you were just saying there, as far as using a counselor to kind of target a specific issue was great. Mm-hmm. And you were hopefully able to get some tools and resolve the effects of that on you and in the real world. But then also now being able to go back and use that as a tool, a sustaining tool mm-hmm. in perpetuity to go back and always decompress and let some of the pressure build up out is one of the visual metaphors that they use in their training. So that's something that I'm glad to hear. So good luck yeah. on finding a good fit there and moving forward.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Fortunately, especially with the connections with the organization, obviously with Detroit Love, but also some of my coworkers who have been to therapists in the area as well who have made some recommendations. So I have a couple of names to call. I just need to actually do it.
So, I mean, with that, we've got a decent amount of or a pretty holistic view of your story there. So we can make that pivot to Heart Camp. So you were in the second group in February of 2018 down in Melbourne. So not too far from probably where you're sitting right now. So how did you end up hearing about it initially? I mean, knowing being a follower of Jamie, as you mentioned in your blog post, but kind of seeing that come up, was it something that as soon as you saw it, it was, I've got to do it? Did you kind of mull it over? And then what was the process after that?
I was definitely intrigued when I first saw it. I, being a writer, so I mean, I first started following To Write Love and Jamie because of kind of the mental health aspect, but especially with his book, have really come to respect and admire him as a writer and the way that he tells stories. And so that aspect of Heart Camp really intrigued me because I think that's what I'm pursuing in some capacity. My last blog post is from the end of May. So obviously I'm not consistent with that, but it is something that is there. It lives in me and I just need to continue to have the courage to let it happen.
I've started 5 different blogs with a lot of intention, and then I have about 19 different blog posts throughout my phone that never get posted. So, I mean, as long as you're writing and putting form to that emotion and thought, it's fine. Not everyone has to see it. It doesn't have to go out, but as long as you can channel it somewhere, you know, the intention is enough for some of that.
No, and I struggle a lot with, you know, the ideas that happen in my head usually as I'm falling asleep at night don't always translate to paper the way that I want them to. So figuring that out is
100% same.
is a big problem.
Or I'm in the shower and I can't get out and get it into paper or digital form and then I lose it and it never comes back. So that's most of my struggle.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I was just listening to one of my favorite authors, Jen Hatmaker. I'm very behind on her podcast and I'm currently in her series on writing. And she was just telling somebody about being in the shower with shampoo in her hair and having like the ideas for her next book, like suddenly crystallize. And so she gets out of the shower. She's like, I'm dripping water and shampoo everywhere. Her husband was like, what is going on? And she's like, I have to write this down before I lose it. So I was like, okay, well,
this may be the only reason I invest in an Alexa or a connected smart device so that I can actually do that since Siri doesn't really like me. So that may be the only intention for that.
Yep. Technology could probably help those of us who have these problems. So the writing part of Heart Camp was definitely something that I was interested in, was kind of wanting to get some time away and work on writing anyway. So this was going to be a reason to do that and be able to potentially create some community, which I'm always down for doing. Even though I'm an introvert, it's weird. So I couldn't make the first weekend. I think we did our family Christmas gathering in that weekend in January. So that's the only reason I wasn't at the first one. But when the second one came up, I was like, yes, definitely making that happen. Booked that flight really fast. And so that's how I wound up down here and for the first time. I think just wanting some direction for myself was a big part of why I did this as well. And, you know, who knows, like I said, being a verbal processor, having somebody else talk about things, listening to other people talk about things, particularly around writing, hearing those stories, having other people asking questions and having to process, kind of forcing myself to process through some of those things is super helpful for me.
And in the kind of process it in real time in the room too, as opposed to either knowing you can come back to it or kind of putting it off to the side and coming back to it, or again, you know, having it somewhere else and then again, start processing it when you aren't ready, but having to kind of do that in real time helps a little bit too.
Yep. Agreed. Otherwise I can procrastinate very well.
Was there anything of note, the kind of just like one big thing that comes to mind when you think of that weekend, or anything that was just, you know, one kind of North Star that was the kind of the biggest recollection or most fun moment, or I don't want to use the word heartwarming because it seems a little cliche here, but that seems like also most fitting. So.
Yeah. Wow, hard to pick just one. I mean, I think, again, going back to that blog post that I wrote, just the fact that the whole weekend was built around this idea of your heart is welcome here, and to think through questions like, what would it look like to bring your whole heart and your whole self to your work, whatever that might be. And I think that was really key for me, again, because I've really been dealing with that over the last few years anyway, of figuring out who I am and what is in my heart, which is definitely mm-hmm. helpful, but then also like, okay, so what do I do with that? and so giving myself the space and also the permission to dream about that and to think about what would it look like to bring my whole heart to whatever I'm doing. And particularly with my writing, like what is it that I want to be communicating to myself and to others? And so again, I think for me, it really just kind of continuing to uproot the lies and not helpful things that I've been taught along the way of my heart being too much or mm-hmm. potentially not enough, and that's not the case, that my heart is my heart and it's valuable and important and it matters. And so there, Denny Kolsch did one of our sessions and I paraphrased something that he said, which was, you are necessary, needed, you exist to an end, whether big or small. It is necessary for you and for the world that you figure out what your necessary purpose is. And I think that's just been like, basically, that encapsulates my life over the last few years of kind of going through that process of figuring out what my necessary purpose is and then finding the courage and the strength to be able to live that. So that was a big deal for me. Don't know that I have the answer for all of that yet, but again, just creating that space for that. So,
but knowing that those are the questions you're asking yourself now, as opposed to not even having a yep. direction before yep. is pretty paramount. So that's something that's pretty amazing yep. as well. And you mentioned kind of going back into what you said as far as your addiction really impacting a lot of your relationships mm-hmm. across the board in unexpected ways. One of the themes across all of the interviews that we do here is it's amazing how all of the lies that we tell ourselves and how the lies that we're told from any kind of dimension across society impact those relationships, mm-hmm. impact your professional life, impact your romantic life, and how those affect your dreams and things. So just, again, to be able to now have those questions yep. and know that both those lies are untrue, and to have some of the kind of the arc of your story now be unbounded mm-hmm. Based off of some of that sunlight coming in there is pretty yeah. amazing. Is there anything else on Heart Camp before we just move on to some of the general stuff, or is that pretty much everything for just that weekend in a box right now?
I mean, I think the other thing for me that was huge was just the other people there and the fact that like
the connections.
Yeah, the connections, but also just, you know, obviously Jamie is the one who came up with the idea and planned the various sessions and kind of the bigger conversations, but the fact that everybody else who was there was willing to participate in that and help with creating this space where your heart is welcome, I think was so important and necessary. And that, you know, you could be an introvert and go have introvert time if you needed it, and you could be an extrovert, and there was no judgment and there was space for whatever emotions you were feeling. And yeah, just all of kind of that aspect as well, because I think a lot of times that doesn't necessarily happen at stuff like this. Like, people go in with mm-hmm. an idea of, you know, here's how we can shape it and make it work. But it's also really key as far as the people who are there and attending and what they are willing to put into the time and the space as well. And so it was just really cool to see that happen. And then obviously the relationships continuing even after Heart Camp, continuing to stay in touch with people and have them pop up in my Twitter feed. But then also getting to see, especially with, I'm sure with you too, with being in the part of the first group, but getting to see all of the subsequent groups come into the family. and so getting to watch that hashtag.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of a weird experience where I was an onlooker at the first one, since Amanda was the one that was officially attending that one.
Gotcha.
And then my official group where I attended was LA.
Okay.
So I've said it before where Amanda, my wife, called me the Heart Camp Creeper since I was just hanging around, sitting outside. I was in the lobby reading books and watching football games while everything was going on. But then Jamie was a little bit kinder and gave me a little bit more grace, calling me the Heart Camp Plus One. So that was fun. But then my official group was back in LA. So it was, again, definitely interesting to see from an outsider's perspective looking in, knowing that kind of I myself am a big math nerd.
Okay.
So seeing like the 42 mm-hmm. people and all of the possible combinations and different groups and different how, whether it was a group of two people connecting or that same group mm-hmm. adding one more person, and that's a completely different conversation that they're having and a different connection and just all the different types of possible permutations and combinations of all those people meeting is pretty amazing. And then, as you mentioned, kind of seeing it grow and go from the first Melbourne group to the second Melbourne group to our LA group to then the Nashville group mm-hmm. and how the locality of some of the folks now makes sense. Because we had in LA a couple of people from Nashville who are now obviously just based on kind of locality mm-hmm. have some affinity towards the last two sessions in Nashville. So it's interesting. And I'm sure for the one in February, depending on your schedule, that may be something to pop into for whatever Jamie has planned there as
yep.
well. So yeah, that's pretty awesome to kind of see it grow and see the family grow there too.
Yeah. It's great.
So we'll pivot there based on my math nerd comment to a system of numbers that I'm quite fond of. And you've mentioned being a four on the Enneagram a couple of times. And I don't know if you've heard Jamie say this or heard the joke previously, but there's somebody else, or he even mentioned it on Twitter, but there's somebody else that has referenced his book, and I forget who it is. It's bugging me now, so I'll probably have to go look it up. But and you also referenced Jamie's book and being a mm-hmm. writer and being called if you feel too much. Jamie said that this other person has said time and again that it the alternate title is If You Four
yes,
Too Much.
I can tell you who said that. That was
okay.
So it's Chris Hewerts, who is on the board of To Write Love Under Arms, and he has a book called The Sacred Enneagram, and he does trainings on it and everything. So yes, that's been told to me quite a few times. That's pretty hilarious. Very true.
That's good though, because that's actually the book I'm reading in Kindle right now.
Okay.
So that works well. So that makes that connection even better then. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how long have you been familiar with the Enneagram? Was this recently, a couple of years?
So it's very recent for me. I'm actually in the middle of reading Sacred Enneagram 2, and it's popped up in various places. Actually, the small nonprofit that I worked for, when was that? Almost 5 years ago now? 4 years ago. The founder had an Enneagram book on the shelf somewhere.
Somewhere.
And so I can't remember if we ever talked about it or not. And then of course it's kind of become a big thing in more and more of the church world, I think, these days too. And so more of the people that I follow on Twitter have been talking about it. So I kept kind of like meaning to look into it and figure it out. And so probably maybe after Heart Camp, I did take a test. I don't think it's like the official test, but it was a mm-hmm. test, and my numbers were tied between 4 and 2.
Okay.
So the last few months, so when I started at To Write Love, the group of interns that we had at the time, there were a couple of the interns who were like very much into Enneagram. So it was a topic of conversation quite often.
Pretty regularly.
Yes, in the office. And so Kayla kept bugging me to actually figure out whether I was a 2 or a 4. So I read Ian Cron's book, which I'm now blanking.
The Road Back to You.
Yes, that one. And then I'm in the middle of the Sacred Enneagram. And so basically I went into it knowing a little bit of which number I might be
mm-hmm.
and basically went by how many things I highlighted in each chapter to make that determination. So there are aspects of 2 that I identify with, but I think that's because I think the 4, there is a connection between 4 and the 2. Mm-hmm. I can never remember which way it goes, but so yeah, there's definitely, I can see that connection, but there was so much more in the description of the 4 that I was like, oh, yep, that's, yep, mm-hmm, yep, okay. Oh, now I understand. So I'm still, I would say right now I'm still in the process of figuring out what all of that means and learning more about myself with that. But it's definitely, I've always been intrigued by like personality tests, which I think is probably kind of part of the idea of being a four, because we very much like to think that we are the unique ones in the world. So being able to have something that helps us describe that. And I'm also, so like I'm also an INFJ on the Myers-Briggs, which is also kind of the rarest combination of letters. So yeah, we like to think we're special as force, but.
So that's what you mentioned a couple of books there. One that I was exposed to it initially on the You Made It Weird podcast with Pete Holmes. He mentioned it a couple of times, and it was always something that I put in the back of my head, like, I need to check this out, see what this is, and just never got around to it. But I like the idea of it being a more discrete set of numbers as opposed to Myers-Briggs, since every time I took a Myers-Briggs, I kind of waffled between an E and an I, and then most of the other stuff was there. So like, I always remember the Myers-Briggs as far as when I was attached to Star Wars characters. I got both Yoda and Princess Leia, but I don't remember what the numbers were. So I have to go figure out and see where it was. But I always remember what my number is on the Enneagram. And so the book that I had found after our heart camp was The Essential Enneagram. I found it in a used bookstore that I was basically just walking out of. And I was like, oh, I didn't find anything. I turn around and it's literally at eye level right here. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'll get that one. And this one works about as effective as a lot of the other quick online tests. And it has a couple of good sections, but very similar to Road Back to You and Sacred Enneagram. I'm seeing a lot of obviously similar content, but this one does say that the four and the two are related, so that the stress type of the four is the two. So when you're feeling stress, you tend to go towards the two that way. So for me, whenever it was, there were some similar pieces where I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds right. Or like whenever I was looking at it, like, okay, that seems about good. And then when you would like look at the results, it was like it could vary between like fours or ones or threes, and then it was like the two was off the chart. So it always, whenever I get to it, whether it's like specific questions where it's like, and I'm again being a math geek, I tend to like to try to figure out how the test is grading me while I'm taking the test. So it's like, is this a two question or is this a like a seven question or whatever? So it's like I know how it is, and so most of the time those ended up being kind of correct anyway. So it was different where if you were just kind of multiple choice throughout a bunch of them, and then it ranked each of those, or the test in the Essential Enneagram, basically there's nine paragraphs and then you kind of pick the three that most identify with you. So as I was going through, it was kind of just like ranking them, like, yeah, this makes sense. And I got to the next to the last one, I was like, yeah, this one is definitely the two off the chart, because like this is me to a T, like this could be, you know, my epitaph.
And
so it's interesting the different tests, but as we mentioned in our interview with Britt, where it's not just now a personality test, it's not just, you know, defining your personality type. There is a lot there that is now a tool set and a toolbox for you to be able to do, again, even just knowing that you have, you know, a stress or strength type and what that means and how you fall in and out and some of that stuff, where what I've been exposed to with a lot of the other personality traits, or even as we talk with Britt, some of the, you know, what Hogwarts house are you, stuff like that. Like there's, it's just defining, like kind of like sectioning you off, but not really empowering you. And that's what I like about the Enneagram, where it ends up giving you that power and being able to know, like, I do this because I'm a two, or this is how I would normally react in this situation. But now I can like step to the side and let that go by is so empowering. And I have so much more kind of like emotional just reserves left, because I'm not immediately reacting to things as I have for the past 30 years. So it makes it a pretty empowering tool.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited to continue to work with it and figuring that out. I'm hoping that can be a part of when I do start talking with a counselor, having some of those conversations as well. And I think too, it helps me again with putting words to what I feel and my experiences. And, you know, a lot of times being able to, like, in reading descriptions of the ways, especially the ways that fours react to different things, and then the stressing into a two, was like, oh, now I'm seeing that particular situation clearly and understanding exactly why I reacted the way that I reacted there. And yeah, so a lot of understanding of the past, which will hopefully help me to make better choices in the future.
Now, I mentioned one prototypically British fandom, but we can kind of pivot here into the next topic that I think would overlap a little bit. But you also mentioned that you're a Whovian. Is that part of your self-care and some of that, or what is your experience with the Doctor Who universe there?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's definitely part of my self-care. I'm trying to remember when I finally started watching. I think it was before I moved to Atlanta, which was in 2012. So yeah, it's been about 6 years, I guess, maybe a little bit longer than that. I have friends who have always been fans and just finally was like, all right, I just should check out this show, and started watching it. So I think I started just before Matt Smith became the Doctor. I started watching in real time with him.
And so, then did you go back and watch the other ones, or?
Well, no. So I started from the beginning, the 2005 with Christopher Eccleston.
The current one.
Started with him and got pretty much caught up by the time Matt Smith was starting. Okay. So then started watching in real time from there. So, and then moved to Atlanta, lived with my friends who started the nonprofit. I lived with them for the first year and a half, and so got them into Doctor Who as well. Just been like continuing to proselytize and bring in new converts as much as possible. My brother also, I think he started watching before I did, which was my final kind of like nudge over into the fandom. But yeah, it's fantastic. And I love like the whole concept of it, and particularly like this idea of adventure and, you know, having some random person show up in your life and just being willing to jump in a police box and go to the ends of the world and the ends of time. Which is pretty cool.
Exactly. I've got a little bit of, as for whatever, similar to the Harry Potter fandom, I have a very interesting way of getting into this where similarly, I had friends that forever were telling me about it to jump into it. And it was just something where it just never made it to the top of my list. And so 1 year, I want to say it was 2013, I went to San Diego Comic-Con for the first time. And with friends, we went to a live Nerdist podcast, and John Barrowman was a guest there.
Nice. Nice.
And so after that, like, they were just talking about both Doctor Who and Torchwood to the extent of Captain Jack for most of it. So I went home and then immediately watched the first two seasons of Torchwood, and then had a lot of side references to Doctor Who. I think I watched most of the third season, as that may have been real time at the time. But then I went through and then started kind of all the way through with Christopher Eccleston all the way through to current, where it was, I want to say, Matt Smith at the time too. So it was probably right around the same time you got current.
Yeah.
And it was interesting having a lot of insight, again, being very into nerd culture and having this be a very big portion of it, but not having much insight into it, and kind of seeing the difference, like while I'm watching David Tennant and then like Matt Smith being the current Doctor, and be like, no, there's no way in hell I'm going to want like him over David Tennant. Yep. And then just kind of keep going, where it was very interesting, and the writing is so well done as far as with the concept of the Doctor changing, generating, and the differences between the sentiment between each character and how they bring it out, and some of the kind of the gruffness of David Tennant and then the silliness of Matt Smith and some of the stuff. It's very well done, and for what kind of traditionally was always a kid show, the amount of emotion that it brings out is pretty amazing. Since I was trying to binge watch as many of them as possible, I would go, and I still remember it was mostly like Labor Day weekend, so it had to be like Labor Day weekend 2013 or whatever, but I was sitting down to binge watch a bunch of them, and I was playing Star Wars The Old Republic on one screen, and I was binge watching the rest of them on Netflix over at the other screen, and I was just doing something, and all of a sudden I'm just sitting here playing and paying attention to both things, but then just crying for like no reason, and just paying attention. And it may have been like one of the scenes with David Tennant and on the beach with Rose and everything. And so I'm just like, this is not what I had planned. And so it was just something where, the writing, acting, everything, and just kind of all the twists and turns and the emotion to science fiction, which usually isn't as much of a kind of a joint combination. So it was very well done.
Yeah.
Now, is that something that you found a pretty big community that overlaps with your self-care inside the Whovian space?
I mean, I definitely have other friends who I've connected with. There's actually a group that puts on a Doctor Who specific con in Atlanta, but I never got a chance to actually go to it while I was living there. So I haven't gotten connected with the larger community in that sense, but I think just kind of like you were saying, the storylines and the characters, and especially just this concept of ordinary people getting to go and do some pretty extraordinary things. But the fact that like the fate of the universe can hang on the decision of ordinary people is pretty amazing. And, you know, there's some pretty fantastic lines from the Doctor as well. We actually use them sometimes for our encouraging tweets on the To Write Love on Our Arms social media, just because some of them are really great. And especially the current season, there's been some good ones too. But, you know, again, those bigger ideas of hope and love, and that's what are most important, and kind of our connections and relationships with other people as well. And I'm also a very an empath, and so I get very connected to fictional characters, probably too much connected to fictional characters. So I, yes, definitely catch myself crying very often. And Vincent and the Doctor, when they go back and interact with Vincent Van Gogh, is probably one of my favorite episodes of television. And just the what they did with that, and kind of the conversation even around mental health, it particularly in that situation, was just pretty amazing, honestly. And, you know, these ideas of real stories, and that no matter what the species is, that it's important. And that the Doctor, I think especially in our world, the fact that he is a hero who travels without any kind of weapon is amazing. And that's like, that's been a key from the very beginning, and something that he continues, or she continues to insist on. And the idea of violence not being the answer, and that there's always the opportunity given to whoever is the aggressor in the situation, there's always the opportunity given for them to change their mind and to kind of back off and go away in peace. But if not, then you step up and you protect, and you have to deal with the Doctor, which is not fun.
Mentioning the usage of some of the commentary and quotes and things like that from the Doctor in Three Love pieces there. Now, like, if we had an emoji, it would be the head exploding emoji, because now I'm just finally putting the pieces together, where the Doctor is always a better form of themselves when they have a companion with them. So some of the darkest times that he has is when he's traveling alone.
Yep.
And the fact that connects with the To Write Love, one of their mottos of people need other people, is now just mind-blowing for me. And I don't know why it's taken me so long to connect those dots, but I'm grateful that we did it here. So it's live processing and realization. So, but yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yep.
Why don't we jump to community? You had mentioned that being an introvert but still liking to build community. And it's interesting where we have some of those same discussions as far as introvert versus extrovert and how that affects your view of community and participation in. But what does community mean to you? How important is it? Things like that.
Yeah, I think community has come to mean for me a space where you can be your whole full self without judgment, and that you feel safe enough to do that. And that for me, I think because I'm an introvert, for me that happens typically in smaller groups. So, you know, even in a group of 42 at Heart Camp, having a smaller group at the table, and then having those smaller conversations with one or two others, being able to share those stories. But also, so 3 years ago, I think it's been that long, almost 4 years ago. So I mentioned Jen Hatmaker earlier. She's one of my favorite authors. And she decided for one of her books that she wanted to have, which she called Real People, do the endorsements for the book and to help with launching the book into the world. And so they put out a thing on her social media inviting people to apply to be part of the book launch team. Figured they might get a few people. They had like 5,000 people apply.
Oh, wow.
And so they picked 500 of those to be part of the launch team. And then the 4,500 also kind of got to be involved, but not necessarily to the same level. So I somehow wound up being part of the 500. And they created a private Facebook group for us from the very beginning. And I think partly because of the topic of the book, which was, it's called For the Love. And so she talks about the different kind of circles of love in your life. So starting with yourself and then the people that you live with and then your community and then beyond to the world. And so because I think partly because that was the topic and partly because she did a really good job of kind of creating the space for it, we basically became 500 best friends in some ways. And so over the years, the community, there are people who have left. I think there's probably still about 350 of us still in the group. So for me, like that was just very interesting and unique way for community to happen. I think it appeals to me a lot. And part of why I love social media in general is the fact that like it can be a community space where I don't have to interact with people physically, but we can still, like it's still possible to build those relationships somehow and to maintain them. And when I need to step away from it, I can step away from it. And so, yeah, so it's kind of been the interesting aspect of community social media with me. And then I, like I said, I'm the oldest of five kids, so grew up in a very large, very loud family. And we get along better now than we did when we were kids, but we still get together for the holidays and we do a family vacation. And so having those relationships and those that time together is really important. So just having other people who know me and make it possible for me to have space to be myself and to figure out who I am. I think especially over the last few years, like I said, that's been really important. And my best friend, Heather, who I mentioned before as well, is another aspect of that. She and I, so we've known each other for almost 10 years. And in those 10 years, we have lived in the same state for about 18 months of that 10 years. I met her in February of 2009. In November of 2009, she and her husband and they had the one kid at the time, they moved from Pennsylvania to Oklahoma and they lived there for 2 years. They moved back in December of 2011 and I moved to Atlanta in September of 2012. So we have not been in close proximity for the majority of our friendship, but our friendship has blossomed and grown through phone calls and FaceTime and text messages and time face to face whenever we can whenever we are in the same state. But I think so much of that again goes back to the fact that she has been willing to get to know me and to pursue my heart and knowing who I really am. And I hope that I've been able to do the same for her as well. And yeah, just learning. For me, learning community from her in that capacity, and then hopefully being able to bring that into other spaces that I've been in over time of when going into it, knowing that that's what I want out of community, but also knowing that I have to help create that space as well. And so listening to people's stories and sharing mine, because sometimes that's what gives somebody else courage to share theirs. So.
That's excellent. That's right in line with the majority of a lot of the community aspects there. And it's interesting where the kind of the vast majority of that comes to mean that it's someplace where you can be your true self, be supported and some of that. So that's pretty awesome. We'll start to wrap up with two questions.
Sure.
The one you already know about and kind of gave a quick answer to when we were prepping. The other one, I don't believe you were aware of, or unless you listened to all of the episode, you know about it. So if there's one thing you can have someone take away from your story, what would that be?
I want them to know that they aren't alone, which is also a big thing to write love on our arms. But I think that was the biggest thing for me, especially with the nature of my addiction and the fact that most often, again, it's talked about in the context of men. And so spending a lot of my time just feeling like I was alone in what I was struggling with. I think it's just super important for people to know that no matter what you're going through, you aren't alone, that there's somebody else and that their story may not be exactly like yours, but there are other people who at least have some idea of what it is that you're feeling and you're experiencing. And so share your story, listen to other people's stories, find that strength in knowing that there are other people and there are people who have made it to the other side as well. And so that means that there's hope for you.
That is quite profound and quite worthwhile. So yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite sentiments, both from Detroit Love in Our Arms and kind of what we've got here from this growing community. One that I don't think you were aware of ahead of time, but if you listen to the first episode, you know how we close that one. So if there was a favorite or relatable song that you could have, that you would want to have it be a self-care song, a happy time song, or one that would literally kind of translate to your story exactly, what would that be?
Yeah. So it's an easy question for me. There's a song called Beautiful Things by a band called Gungor. It was actually literally my anthem for a few years. So the chorus, oh, good Lord, see if I can remember what the lyrics are right now at the top of my head. So it talks about you make beautiful things out of the dust. And so this idea that, you know, things can fall apart around you and just completely be obliterated into dust. And yet God makes beautiful things out of that he made humans out of the dust. And so he can continue to make beautiful things out of the dust. And kind of there's the idea of like a garden and some other things in there as well. But this idea that things that we look at, and for me, particularly this idea of failure and shame that I dealt with for so much of my life, that God has been able to bring beautiful things out of that in my own life. And then also just by my sharing my story with other people and being able to build relationships in that community and in that space that way. And yeah, so it's that reminder of the hope that I hold on to, that no matter what, God can make beautiful things out of anything. So.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.